Hey there, this is Steph. Welcome back to Geopets Podcast. I do not have a new season for you yet. That is coming soon, and I'll tell you about that in just a minute. But today, I actually have part of an interview that Matt Boyle from Legendary Language Learner published with me. He actually interviewed me for a language podcast. Yay! Or a language YouTube channel, I should say. I want it to be a podcast. So Matt, I'm willing it into the world. Anyway, so I'm taking a clip from that interview that is over on his Legendary Language Learner. Legendary Language Learner YouTube channel. And I'll have that for you today. Now, since a lot of you are actually following me in the podcasting space, and then dip over into this expat-ish side of my content creation, what I'm including here is half of the interview that Matt did with me, because I think you're pretty familiar with my podcasting life. But what you don't know so much about, and what I don't talk nearly enough about anymore, is the 15 or so years that I spent teaching the English language in many different incarnations overseas, mostly in Asia, but also a little bit in universities in the United States, which is clearly not overseas because that is my passport country. So I think most people are the most unfamiliar with that giant chunk of my life. So that's the part that I'm including in this episode. Now, if you feel like you want the whole thing, you can just automatically go over to his YouTube channel and listen to the whole thing, or you can listen to this half. And then if the mood strikes you, jump on over to Legendary Language Learner. Matt Boyle is doing a ton of wonderful things in the language learning space, and that's how we initially connected, and we'll go over all that at the beginning, or he'll go over all of that at the beginning of this really cool conversation. And we connected at the beginning of my content creation in 2017. And so it's really sweet to almost near my 5-year podversary to reconnect with him. I mean, we've kept in touch the whole time, but to reconnect with him in a way that is turning the tables, and where he's interviewing me about my language teaching, my language learning, and content creation, and then over on his YouTube channel, the rest of it, which covers my podcasting career as a member of the industry itself, as a full-time podcast editor, which is currently where I stand. Whew, that's a lot. That's a lot, a lot. I am also working on the next season of Geopets, so I haven't dropped the ball. I've just gotten so busy with my business, which is good, but it's finally calmed down, and I've gotten my workflow down where I can work on my own content creation. And I've done the first half of a micro season where I'm interviewing expats or former expats who grew up as children of immigrants in wherever their passport country is. And so I'm really excited to dig into that, because that's probably the most personal that any of my themed episodes or seasons have been. This really dives much, much deeper into the beginning of my own feeling out of placeness, which I shouldn't say beginning, because it's never ended. I will forever feel like a fish out of water. And there's another episode on another podcast coming out later that will fill in the blanks as to why that's okay. But I don't want to spoil that, because that's a little bit in the future. Anyway, that's pretty much it. So again, this is from the YouTube channel, not podcast, Legendary Language Learner with Matthew Boyle. He is over, he's another American who is over in China and has been there for quite a long time. And he has built up such an interesting life for himself over there. If you want to know more about Matthew, head over to his YouTube channel, and I'll have that link in the show notes for you. But again, you can just search for Legendary Language Learner. You'll see the very cool artwork and the subtext of make language learning magical. And that he does. All right. So thank you very much. And here is the partial interview conversation that Matthew and I had about the beginnings of my content creation and my language learning teaching experience overseas. I hope you enjoy this.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Legendary Interviews series. I'm Matthew Boyle, and I'm here today with Stephanie Fuccio from the Geopats Podcast Network. And Stephanie and I actually met years ago because she reviewed one of my language learning card games on her YouTube YouTube channel. That was Chinese Champions. And then later had me on for some interviews on her podcast. And that was really fun. We've stayed in touch over the years. She's been a great inspiration and mentor to me because she's moved really strongly and heavily into the podcasting space and the social media sphere. But I wanted to have her on today to talk about something at first a little bit lesser known about her. I think people will know less about her past as a teacher, and then we can get into how she actually transitioned into podcasting, which is really quite a major life change and a major career change. So I thought that would be really interesting to have her on to talk about that for people who might be going through something similar and talk about how do you navigate a major life change or a major career change. And of course, we'll talk about the podcasting as well. But first of all, Stephanie, thanks for coming on. And can you tell us how you got into teaching, which, by the way, I have a background in teaching as well. So I know we can jam on this and I'm sure people will be interested to hear about it. So how did you get into teaching?
Yay. Well, first and foremost, thank you so much, Matthew, for having you on here. For having me on here. It is 7 a.m. where I am in Rome, Italy. So if I flub, it's probably because it's early. So how did I get into teaching? Honestly, I graduated with my undergraduate degree at the ripe old age of 30 after like spending a long time in and out of school. And then I was looking for something. I thought I was looking for a job, but I studied basically engineering management, but the tech crash happened pretty much 6 months before I graduated. And all the jobs I wanted weren't there, which was such a blessing in disguise. And so I ended up accidentally kind of bouncing around the US after finishing university and doing temp jobs and just trying to figure out where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do, since the jobs I wanted that I thought I was trading myself for weren't there. And I ended up accidentally staying in hostels in San Francisco. And I met all of these travelers that weren't rich, that were going and seeing all of these places on such a low a budget. And that got me started living overseas, which got me for like months at a time in hostels in Eastern Western Europe. And that got me meeting people that were teaching English. So how is that for a roundabout way to answer the question? So I just started meeting people who were doing it. And I thought, oh, so I don't have to be like a backpacker in a dorm bed in a hostel to live overseas. I could actually have a legitimate, regular daily life, which is much more my style. I am a terrible traveler, but I really love cementing myself in a place for 1, 2, 3 years and having a daily life, having a job, but going, you know, doing really boring, mundane things. I love that in a different place. Yeah. So I checked. Yeah. So that's how I got started.
So what subject did you teach? What grade level of students, and how long were you teaching for?
That is the sticky wicket. When you say teacher, people think primary or secondary school, elementary school, high school. I never did any of that. Mm-hmm. I was always English is a foreign language teacher overseas. And much later, like after a decade of doing it in different countries, mostly in Asia, I actually went back for my graduate degree in the US. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was teaching, oddly, Americans, like native speakers of English. And then I slid into teaching the international students in writing courses, like first year writing courses in the US. But most of the time that I was teaching was teaching English as a foreign language, as a communication skill, as a conversation skill, overseas, not in formal situations, in language schools, as extra programs at universities, that kind of thing.
So was it like a mixed age group? Was it young adults or adults, college students, or all mixed?
Depends on the context. It definitely wasn't mixed. Like, for example, when I taught in Hanoi, Vietnam, it was anywhere from like teenagers on weekends to adults like general classes for adults, depending on the level, anywhere from beginning up to advanced, up to TOEFL and IELTS. We also did business classes. We did some business classes in the companies themselves. Mm-hmm. When I taught in Japan, it was an extracurricular, they were extracurricular classes at the university, but they had to sign up and it was different times. Often it was in their lunchtime. That's mm-hmm. the hardcore students that we had. They would like, I don't need a break. I'm going to go to English class. Yeah. Yeah. And when we were in Nanjing, China, it was a foundation year, which is such a British term. It was between their high school and university year where they were preparing to be international students in countries like the US, Australia, the UK, that kind of thing. So it's really different context, but never really in, never in the primary secondary school situation.
I see. So I kind of wanted to ask you what are the pros and cons of that as you see them, but I realize that's kind of, that's a really big question, hard to summarize when you're taught in so many different contexts. But I mean, when you think back about teaching as you did, you mentioned Vietnam, China, and I think Japan, did you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you think back, what was it that you liked about this lifestyle and this job, and what was the sort of the disadvantage or the downside of it?
Oh, that is a big one. Thing I really liked about it were the students, absolutely positively, because I was teaching like young adults and adults. I don't have the patience for tiny kids. I think they're adorable. I just am not that kind of teacher that is really good at doing more kind of behavioral or cultural kind of shaping. I wanted to dive into the language and make stupid jokes that adults would get and that kind of thing. So I'm more of that goofy adult teacher. So the students were definitely the plus in all of it. I got a window into cultures through trying to help them express themselves by giving them the layer of English. They were able to say things that they wanted to say about who they were and how they, like what they were thinking about and different aspects of their culture. And I got to do it in English, which is a blessing and a curse because I also spent most of my day in English instead of learning local languages. But then it was also like, oh man, I'm getting such a cheater cultural moment here by having these long conversations with folks in a language I already know and I'm super fluent in. So that's definitely an advantage. The disadvantages of the TOEFL industry of teaching English as a foreign language industry are vast. The basic salary of TOEFL teachers since I started in 2003 has pretty much stagnated at $1,200 a month. It's 2022. I don't look anymore, but I have friends still in the industry and they're still looking saying, I can't believe the majority of the jobs are still $1,200 a month. Like that's almost 20 years of no increase in salary when there definitely has been an increase in cost of living in a lot of places. So it's really hard to maneuver advancing in a career while not having many benefits. Mm-hmm. To getting better at what you do and putting effort and time and career development in and seeing that most of the jobs are still meant for somebody to come and do it for a year or two.
Yeah, it seems like the foreign language teachers everywhere. I mean, yeah, you hit the nail on the head with this, what you just said there, because you know, one of the advantages is you can go to so many places and learn so much about culture. And a lot of places would be honored to have you and love to have you. But on the other hand, money's pretty low. I mean, definitely don't get into it if you think you're going to, you know, strike it rich. I think the only way you can really do that is if you teach at higher level, like international schools, or get lined up with a good business and to be like their, you know, work inside a business as their point person for that.
Yeah.
Or maybe get into higher level administration somehow. But yeah, most of the jobs are just like you said, as I have learned as well. So let's talk a little bit more, but before we kind of get into the shift, let's talk a little bit more about your superpowers as a teacher. What were you really good at, and what did you get better at during all those years?
My superpowers as a teacher. I'm good at talking to people as people. I know a lot of teachers felt that they needed to always keep the authority in the room, and I just didn't care. I was like, look, you're here to communicate, and I want to help you use this language to talk to anybody you want to. So I would personalize and try to give, even though we had like goals, definite goals within each class and each week, each month, you know, there's the curriculum, but there's things that that students walk into the room wanting to talk to others about. And so I would try to personalize it to the point where they could not just get the stuff we needed to do as a class, but stuff they needed to do to be themselves in that language. Because, I mean, you're fluent in Mandarin, and you know that getting your personality into your non-native language is super hard. Mm-hmm. And so my goal was to get them to relax and to get them to have the actual language to be able to have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now that you mentioned that, I think it's so cool that this is sort of a part of your personality, that you're very social and you easily get people to sort of lower their barriers. And that is something that you were able to do in your teaching career. And now throughout social media and throughout podcasting. So it's really great you were able to bring this out in yourself and share it with others. I also think it's really important to do that with students, to just be on a level with them and let them know that you care and open them up for the communication, because there's so much more that they learn besides content or besides the goals, the standards of the programs. So, mm-hmm. If you would like to go back to that time, well, I don't know if you would like to go back, but if you did have to go back, it is a lot of hard work, guys. If you've never been a teacher, if you had to go back, what would you like to change about how you approached that profession? And what advice would you have for people who are going down that road and thinking they want to get out and teach English abroad?
Oh, I think the one thing that the TEFL industry does is the disservice to the people that work hard in it is it promotes itself, if it can. It promotes itself as something where you can see the world. And honestly, to sustain a comfortable life, and I'm not talking about riches, but I'm just talking about mm-hmm. to be able to grow old in the industry, you need to stay in one place. And those are two very conflicting things. A lot of like TEFL programs, like certificate programs, say you can go to this country and this country and this country and this country. But if you do what I did and you switch countries every few years, you lose all of your seniority. No matter how much experience you have, everybody in the new place thinks that you're starting new. Mm-hmm. Which is infuriating, but it's just how it is. So if you pick a place, if you pick a city or a country, even just the country, and you stay there, you can advance and get to those administrative jobs. You can you can have a meteor career. Whereas if you switch locations, it's very unlikely to happen. Very, very unlikely to happen. Even within the international schools, well, that's a totally different bag. And I've never worked in the international school system. But it's so tricky. It's so tricky. So I wish I had known that. Although on the other hand, if I had known that, I probably wouldn't have done it in the first place, because my goal was to be able to live in different countries. Yeah. So... Yeah.
What I might say, just to kind of summarize that point, and it is a great point for people, is, yeah, you could probably try this without too many reservations for a few years, mm-hmm. but realize you're going to need a longer term plan, and you're going to need to consider where you really want to be, because I've met a lot of expats who seem like at home and no place, and they've built nothing mm-hmm. up because they've been moving around so much. And just like you said, when you move around a lot, they always see you as new. You lose your pay, you lose your seniority, just like you said. And also, you're not really building up a more stable network of friends and family where you are, if you're only there for a few years. So, you know, it could be very fun for you. You could grow a lot. But if you really want it to sustain you in the long term, you have to think a little bit differently than just getting out to see the world or teach English or whatever. And I like that you pointed out sort of the conflict of how they advertise it and show it to the world and what actually mm-hmm. ends up happening to people. People can easily kind of be drawn into the sort of feed the machine, teachers and students alike, the sort of English teaching and learning machine. So we have to be careful for ourselves. Now, you've mentioned to me that you faced some burnout. You already mentioned the low pay. You also told me that you went through a life-saving surgery, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And you decided that I'm going to get out of this industry. I'm going to get out of this field, take a new direction. So can you tell us more about that?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I was actually in a PhD program that I left, did not finish because of health issues, but also because, oh, gosh, it was so exhausting. Great program, but PhD programs in the US are exhausting. They're like 5 to 7 years, and you're literally working all the time if you do the funding route. And by funding, I mean you get very little and you work all the time. Yeah. it's a lot. So I had some serious health issues and I had to get surgery, and I was teaching first year, writing classes, and my supervisor basically said, you have to find your replacement. Mm-hmm. And at that moment I was just like, you know, I don't think this is going to work. I just, no degree is worth this. No step up career wise is worth this. And I said, this is just, like you said, the straw that broke the camel's back, not the camel that broke the straw's back. 7 a.m. So yeah, but I was still, you know, in grad school and not super wealthy. So I actually ended up going back to China and doing IELTS testing as an examiner, which at the time, this is pre-pandemic, it was still a very lucrative thing, which is just crazy to me that teaching, like 10 years of teaching, and I was still struggling to make way in a substantial way in the career. And yet I went back, and honestly, as an examiner working full-time, traveling all around the country in our busiest month in August, I almost made 10,000 US. It was just crazy. I'm like, wait. We test people and we make tons of money, and we teach people and we make very little.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was crazy. It was really, truly crazy. I was very confused, but also very grateful to have that job and recoup financially, because I thought I needed a few more years to transition to something. I can't just turn on a dime. Yeah. I took that job so that I could recoup financially, I could get my health back up, and so I'd have time and mental space to figure out what to do, so I could have something else happen. I had no idea what it was, but I was like, I need a few years to transition out of the industry.
Yeah, and when you mentioned the IELTS examining, I realized I left that out. If you are thinking you need more money, that's also something that pays higher. But as I think Stephanie would agree, that's a whole other can of worms, because you're basically just examining students all the time. You're not really with your students, growing them and teaching them. You're constantly examining. So that's a different ball of wax.
And I'm not even sure what it's like anymore with the pandemic and things. I'm not sure that the opportunities are really.
Yeah.
As there, you would know this much better than
I also don't really know, actually, but yeah, worth it for people to consider and investigate. So can you tell us, this is a part of the interview I'm really excited for. I think a lot of people stand a lot to gain from this, myself included. So how did you start to brainstorm and plot out a new direction? What were some of the ideas you were bouncing off the wall, and what form did it eventually take?
I none of this was strategic. I literally got back to Shanghai in 2017 and my brain felt like it was falling out. Like I was just seriously, the PhD program was stimulating to a certain degree, but it also was really taxing. So I just said, I'm just going to take a few months. I'm just going to do the job. I'm going to eat in good restaurants and I'm going to enjoy being back in Shanghai and I'll see what happens. And that's when I got back into studying Mandarin, studying reading and writing Mandarin, and started and I just kind of let things happen. So I was traveling a lot for work. So I was taking a lot of pictures and photos because China is just, oh man, it's so easy to visually capture something amazing.
Yeah.
So I was just having fun. I was just letting myself have fun and just kind of heal. And I just started creating content. I started documenting what I was learning with the Hanzi characters. And so I started a YouTube channel, and then I started a podcast in secret about my expat experience, my first time in Asia, in Taiwan. And then after a few months, I finally started telling people that I had a podcast. Like I was just trying to get stuff out of me and just to get, just to be creative again and just to do other things. So I was just kind of I wasn't even throwing spaghetti at the wall because I wasn't even thinking. I knew I was going to be there for a few years. So I just was doing stuff to have fun and relax and heal. And things just progressed really fast.
And about what time was this? Because I feel like this is around when maybe I reached out to you or when we met online through the social media stuff.
I think so. Well, that was early 2017. And I don't remember when we connected, but I feel like it was that first year.
Yeah, gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
I realize now how many years passed. That's crazy. But I think I've probably found out about you from the Chinese stuff that you were posting about. Probably, and changing scripts and all that. Yeah. So you are sort of going through this period of R&R and letting the creativity regrow and come back. And you started producing content, doing some podcasting in secret. Could I ask you a little bit more about that part? Because that may be interesting for people thinking to get into content creation and podcasting, that idea that you were starting to do it, but you weren't telling anybody. So why were you not letting people know? And when did it start to become, you were more comfortable with letting people know? What was that process like? Because I think some people fear to put up their first videos, their first podcasts. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm intentionally cutting the interview off there, like I mentioned before. I really want the podcasting stuff, which is pretty much not a repeat, but it's information that I think a lot of people are already familiar with, to be over on his YouTube channel. So if you are someone who's more in the language learning space and you're not familiar with my podcasting side, hi, nice to meet you. Nice to ear meet you. How do we say that? I don't know. I don't care. I'm just excited that you're here and that you've been listening this far into this borrowed episode from Matthew Boyle's Legendary Language Learner YouTube channel. So to hear the rest of this conversation, go over to Matthew's YouTube channel and have a listen. You can start at about 22 minutes in is about where I cut that off. And again, this is borrowed from Matthew. So thank you so much for letting me replay it here on Geopat's podcast. The other episodes that we have range the full gamut from online, like expat, they're expat heavy, and they range from coffee in different places around the world, books that teach us about where we're living outside of our passport country, languages that we're learning or want to learn, and so much more. I hope you dig into the Geopat's catalog. I am still moving a lot of the episodes back into Geopat's. We did some rebranding twice within 2-year period. It's been messy, but we're getting everything organized and back into one. So do, you know, subscribe or follow to us wherever you are so that when newer episodes emerge or recombined back in, you actually have access to them immediately. Thank you so much for listening to this borrowed episode that is playing on the Geopat's podcast. And, of course, if you want to contact me, I am Steph Fuccio, Stephfuccio, everywhere online. That's also my email address and my Gmail address.
and my website. All right, more soon. Promise. Bye.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.